B-Pod Studios.
They work.
Arr, matey.
Well, you're at work. Scott Zolak.
I think it's a disaster.
Mark Bertrand.
I know. I want to get it out.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Welcome into Zolak and Bertrand on a Wednesday. How you doing, Zol?
Great.
Hang doing on. Great.
Wipe it down for these weekend slobs.
Well, it's Wednesday. It's not Monday.
We weren't here yesterday.
Okay. Here's a tweet 8 minutes ago from Ian Rappaport.
What do we got?
The latest on Antonio Brown. Here we are again. Another day. More Antonio Brown. You want Antonio Brown? This is what you got to deal with. The daily updates. The daily latest on the investigation, latest on the situation. Where are we at on Antonio Brown? This is what you got to do, Hardy. This is the hard work you got to do. This is what you got to put in day by day,
week by week.
You got to grind it out AB.
This is what you signed on for.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Here's what Ian Rappaport, rap sheet. Rap sheet on Twitter says.
What did he say?
There is no update on the status of Patriots wide receiver Antonio Brown, I'm told, which means he's still eligible at this point to play on Sunday.
No kidding.
The league often likes to have the status of players clear on Wednesday before the biggest practice day.
It's big.
So in his mind, with there being no update on the status, I think that's an opinion of Rappaport's that if there's no action by Wednesday of a week, the player is going to continue on status quo for that given week. Meaning, if you hit the practice field on Wednesday, you're probably going to play that given week. Given the type of investigation that is going on right now, meaning the depth of the investigation, this is not one that's going to be wrapped up overnight, right?
No, they haven't even talked to him yet. Or Hollywood Brown, right? The supposed other individual that was there 2 years ago and, according to her, witnessed this.
Right.
Or knew of.
I think there's a lot more work that they're going to do in this investigation. There's a new story up on The Athletic from Daniel Wallach. I spoke with him this morning. He's going to join us at 10:20.
Legal Eagle.
Nice.
Daniel Wallach, our buddy Daniel Wallach. And I joked with him and I said, it is amazing how the Patriots keep bringing us back together, my friend. It is unbelievable.
Great.
Here we are again in a legal situation, a suspension situation, possible suspension situation, I should say, where the league is looking at legal matters and investigations. And here's Daniel Wallach on the scene once again. Got a great story up. He writes for The Athletic now. He's now one of their chief legal guys there. Again, he's going to be with us coming up in about 15 minutes. You'll hear some of this directly from him. But as he writes in his story on The Athletic, the investigation will likely last several months. We talked about this yesterday. Do you want it to wrap up quickly or do you want it to sort of drag on? He writes, the investigation will likely last several months as the events in question concern at least three alleged incidents occurring in two cities, Pittsburgh and Miami, 11 months apart. According to Taylor's civil complaint, the alleged acts of sexual misconduct escalated over the course of time. The complaint alleges, he mentions both the acts that are alleged, including the unnamed NFL player, which, according to Pro Football Talk, is his friend and cousin, Hollywood Brown.
Nice nickname.
What's that?
Nice nickname, Hollywood.
It says Taylor's civil complaint alleges that she told a number of people about the rape, including her fiancé and a religious advisor, And Daniel Wallach writes, NFL investigators will likely seek to interview each of these people. Which means they will not only speak to the accuser and to Antonio Brown, but they're going to want to speak to Hollywood Brown, as you just said, Zoe. They're going to want to speak to whoever this religious advisor is, if he's willing to speak. I don't know what sort of confidentiality will apply there. If the accuser says, no, go ahead. You're free to speak about what we spoke about in my defense. If the fiance, now husband, they got married last weekend, is now going to also speak if he hasn't spoken already, considering NFL investigators traveled to her for the 10 hours. Maybe that was a part of the 10 hours a couple of days ago. But this could possibly mean that there's more than just two people they're going to talk to in the course of this investigation. They could sort of widen the net, if you will.
If they're going to talk to the people that she's involved with, then they're probably going to have to talk to the people he's involved with and he's talked about the relationship with too, right?
Remember
right.
the people that he mentioned?
There's two sides
Remember
to this,
his
folks.
Witnesses that he said were in the club with me in Miami? Yep. My witnesses yep. that said this girl? Well, now we got to go talk to those guys.
Well, but not even witnesses, guys? Just people that are aware of their relationship and how their relationship, but they're going to, if they're going to open up the net like that, then this yeah. is going to take a long time.
Yeah, yeah, I'm just saying the guys that we know of already that he's mentioned in his side, which is the people that were in that nightclub in Miami, right? People,
yeah.
Friends of his. Well, we got to go talk to the people who were there that night that are friends with you, that are you know, your friends and your acquaintances that yeah. will back up your version of events that you want us to speak to. Now we got to go talk to those guys. If that's how this goes, and the NFL is completely free to decide how thorough they want to be, then it could go on for a long
sure.
time. It could go on for several months.
Hey, maybe the team likes the fact that, you know what, based on how this thing's structured, and it's pretty much identical to the Revis deal where there's really no year two, they're not going to pick up that type of auction. You got this guy for a year. Yeah, take your time on this.
So here's what could end up being, I guess, good news for those of you who don't want to see Antonio Brown off the football field at any point.
That's me.
It says, given the seemingly large number of potential witnesses and documents to examine, it's doubtful the NFL will complete its investigation soon. Daniel Wallach writes, as we have learned from the league's past investigations, the wheels of justice move very slowly at 345 Park Ave. The Ezekiel Elliott matter is a perfect case in point. It took the NFL more than a year from the time that Elliott was accused of domestic violence to hand down a 6-game suspension. So if it takes a year, I don't think Antonio Brown's going to be here in a year, do you?
No.
This is a one-shot deal.
I think you're loaded up for this year. Load it up. I think they're going for it. Isn't that kind of obvious? And just based on, you know, some of the tapings we did, like as much as they know or how they expect a player to be available or not available, you know, he's included in some of the stuff we looked at yesterday, which is in a can. I think they fully expect him to play. That's why I chuckled at, you know.
Yeah, first, the Patriots posted their plays of the week that you did with Belichick.
Yeah,
his first play was Antonio Brown's first catch.
Yep. Yeah. So.
God, he was wide open.
You think?
They blitzed, huh?
They blitzed. Let's play blitz zone against this team. It's going to do you a lot of good moving forward.
So
blitz zone.
All of that being said, there's this. There's the possibility of this. There is the possibility of going on the commissioner's exempt list. And Daniel Wallach believes that might actually be happening soon. Not a suspension. Exempt list with pay, which is not punishment. It's just you can't play right
now. You can't play. We're trying to figure this out. You can get paid, but it doesn't look good to have you on the field.
And that's really what the question is about. Not about his money. Not about getting fired. Not about being held out off the field for a suspension without pay. The real question is going to be about, does he go to the commissioner's exempt list and get his money? Right? Which, according to Daniel Wallach, the interview with the accuser is now important, that it's different from just a civil complaint. He's going to help explain that to us because we're not lawyers. He is. He knows that better than we do. But apparently the fact that they've now opened the investigation makes it far more plausible that they could soon do that, put him on the exempt list and take him off the field. And if that happens, though, are we going down the road of the league is out to get the Patriots again? Is that the road
New England is
going to go down?
I mean, that's how some will look at it. Yeah, I mean, come on.
Are we going to put a banner up? Are we going to put a banner up on the lighthouse of Antonio Brown?
I don't think you're going to get that.
Are we going to have arrests? Are the Barstool guys going to go get arrested at 345 Park Avenue?
No, they only do that for Brady.
Are we going to...
The Brady Four. They only do
can't
that.
Can't rule out anything Barstool guys do.
Are we going to...
They might do it. Dave, they might actually do it.
Dave will have something up his sleeve.
What's going to happen? Is that what we're going... Are we going down that road again?
Fire Goodell hats two, part two.
Is that what's going to happen for this guy?
I mean,
is it going to be the same response?
No, because I think
for Antonio Brown is what we had for Brady.
No, come on. Yeah, the way people view Brady, I mean, Brady walks on water. Come on.
I fear that if he goes on the exempt list, that the reaction will be the same. I fear that.
Where do you see the crowd reaction? Where do you see the crowd reaction to this guy? Because it's sort of the same crowd down in Miami.
Yeah, I fear
Patriots
that
fans.
Too.
Every time he touched the ball in warmups, the place went nuts.
Yeah, great.
I've never seen that for a player.
Terrific.
Yeah, I mean, Brady takes the field for the warm-up. Everybody goes nuts. And then that's it for warm-ups. You're done cheering. They cheered the entire warm-up every time he touched the ball. Since I haven't seen anything like that with a player. Yeah. To your question, I'm just answering it. Yes, it's going to go down that road. I mean, we're not going to do that. I'm not going to lead that.
Okay, so then
I had fun with that with
you
Dave.
You said no at first.
Fire Goodell.
Now you think it's the same.
But I mean...
So you reverse course.
Well, at this point, they're like, bleep you. You know, double freedom rockets to everybody. Let's go 19 and up, whatever you want to call it. I mean.
Yeah, this is the most galvanized fan base I've ever seen. I mean, this fan base is tight.
It's almost, I don't want to say this.
They hate us because they ain't us. We're doing that. We're going to do that again over Antonio Brown.
You know, I joked with our crew that actually did our game in the preseason, our production crew. Like, they're doing the game this week. They did the Jets game, I guess, the other night. They're like, the Jets will not cross the 50 this week. Like, you need something else.
I don't know what that has to do with Antonio
because,
Brown.
Because, and talking about this with Jim in a way, from a rooting standpoint, other until you see Cleveland down the road, this is going to carry you.
Okay. All right. We've got Daniel Wallach of The Athletic, legal expert. He's written extensively about this investigation and where it might go in the coming days. He'll join us coming up next.
All right. Zolak and Bertrand.
That's a 3-inch difference between those two guys.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
Two chances to win Patriots tickets on the show today. Very, very big news here. 11:30 and 1:30 today. Two times, though. Two times.
Duh.
11:30 and 1:30. Chances to win Patriots tickets. Bert Breer is going to join us coming up on the show today at 11 a.m. So we're looking forward to having Bert in studio with us starting at 11. And two chances to win Patriots tickets. Once at 11 and another 11:30 and another one at 1:30. 11:30 and 1:30. But right now, let's go to the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline and welcome in. No stranger to this show. The Patriots keep bringing us back together. Now he's writing for The Athletic. The last time we saw him, he was on the show at the Super Bowl when we were down in Atlanta getting ready for the Super Bowl. It's Daniel Wallach. He is with us now on the Volkswagen Dealers Expert Hotline. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well, Mark. Thanks for having me on. I guess it looks like the Flategate gave me a little bit of a career, so I'm grateful for it.
Patriots keep you in business, is what it is.
Yeah,
that's what it is.
No question. Very soon, I'll have an office in Boston soon enough. So it's getting to that point. Thanks.
So you think that Antonio Brown will soon be placed on the commissioner's exempt list?
Well, I don't want to have my article in The Athletic be characterized as a prediction. What I was trying to stress is the level of vulnerability that he now has once the NFL has opened an investigation and then the accusing witness spends 10 hours meeting with NFL investigators. The threshold for placing Brown on the exempt list is so low that if Commissioner Goodell wants to place him on the exempt list, he has sufficient legal justification for doing so. The standard isn't whether he's guilty or more likely than not has committed the violation. The standard is whether the commissioner subjectively believes that Brown may have violated the policy. That's as low as an evidentiary bar as you'll ever see.
Daniel, I've been deposed before, and you go in and you talk to people. And when this report came out that she met for over 10 hours with investigators. That raise your eyebrows one way or the other?
No, we knew that the NFL would want to meet with her and have a detailed conversation. This is not something that can be communicated in only an hour or two. She has alleged three incidents over an 11-month period of time in two different cities. There is not just one evening or one incident in question, but it is a full set of circumstances and their relationship. They knew each other in college and have worked together on and off over the years. So there's a lot to unpack there for the NFL. So it doesn't surprise me at all that the meeting lasted at least 10 hours. Okay. In fact, I would have been surprised if it was much less than that. I mean, depositions of witnesses in court cases often last 8 hours, if not longer.
When it comes to her cooperation, how does that advance the case versus what we had last week, which was just a civil filing? Now that they have a witness who's talking to the league and meeting face to face, how does that sort of move the case forward in the NFL's eyes?
Well, a week ago, all the NFL had was an unsworn complaint, meaning that it was drafted by her lawyers and not sworn by her under oath. And under the personal conduct policy, the paid leave provision is only available where there's like a criminal proceeding, an indictment, some type of, you know, criminal situation, or where there is an investigation and there's some basis for believing that something may have happened. Okay, once the accusing witness walks in that door yesterday, we have both an active investigation and some evidence. Now, it's up to Roger Goodell to weigh the evidence to determine whether she's being truthful, whether she's credible. But at this point, the whole point behind the leave policy and the use of the exempt list isn't to assess guilt or innocence, but to place the player, so to speak, in a penalty box for the time being so that the league can conduct an investigation and ultimately arrive at the truth. The problem with the use of the exempt list is that it is, in my view, a form of punishment. And if you place him on the sidelines for 6 weeks or 8 weeks, and then he ends up winning the case, or the league decides, well, you know, the discipline isn't warranted here, haven't you already punished him? And you're not going to be able to go into a time machine and restore those lost 6 games or 8 games. It's not only about the money. Roughly 1/4 of his compensation is tied up in reaching certain performance incentives, and being on the sidelines also hampers his ability to get a second contract next year.
Now, I know there are comparisons to Zeke Elliott. We went through the most recent one, Tyreek Hill, you know, this past spring, and the length that took. Roethlisberger's name has been brought up as to be the most similar one to this, where he got the 6 and it got lowered to 4. How much do you see those two tying in, or has the league and the investigations changed?
Yeah, Mark, I think an even better precedent is Marcellus Darius of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Two women filed lawsuits against him last year, civil lawsuits in Florida State Court, both of which alleged sexual assault. And in one of the lawsuits, the victim or the plaintiff alleged that he gave her a sexually transmitted disease. So it lines up exactly, you know, the same as the Brown lawsuit. That you have civil lawsuits, nothing other than a civil lawsuit. And in the Darius case, the NFL never investigated and didn't even consider. They never put Darius on the NFL commissioner's exempt list. So these two situations could end up being treated disparately. No action taken in the civil case against Darius. And if Brown is placed on the commissioner's exempt list, you're looking at disparate treatment of two similarly situated people.
So you think it's because of his high profile, because of everything that he's sort of done to put himself in the news, or dare I say, because he's a Patriot, as some Patriots fans would say?
I think he's brought a lot of unnecessary drama and indigestion to the NFL over the past, you know, 6 to 8 weeks. But the NFL can't ignore a rape allegation, and the high profile nature of the athletes and the news reporting surrounding this case really left the NFL with no choice but to investigate. They can't turn a blind eye when a woman alleges that an active player raped her. Last year, the Darius case didn't really get a lot of news coverage. So from the NFL's perspective, the public relations aspect of it and the image aspect of it probably moves the needle as much as the actual underlying allegations.
Well, you look at as many quarterbacks that went down and so-called superstars as far as ratings and revenue and, you know, attraction to the league. I even go back to the Greg Hardy stuff. We're calling that game down in Dallas. and you know, some of the detailed stuff that came out of that. But you know, Jerry Jones goes to bat for. We need these superstars in the league. And when Antonio's right, he's one of the best in the league, if not the best. So how much does that weigh with the NFL?
You know, I don't know that the hometown allegiance to the player is really going to matter or influence what the NFL does. This is a policy that has to be applied even-handedly based upon the facts and what the NFL learns. I mean, in every city, the ownership or the fan base goes to bat for their local player. It happened in Baltimore. Ray Rice was caught on video slugging his wife. And the first time he goes into, you know, the Ravens home game, he gets a standing ovation. I think that's a normal reaction in every team's market to support the player and not necessarily believe the allegations, because, you know, bottom line is, you know, Brown is a great player and he improves the Patriots' chances of winning. So when viewed through that lens, you know, most fans that follow that particular team probably, you know, subconsciously err on the side of wanting to, you know, see him play. But in this case, because of the high profile nature of the athlete, and most importantly, the disturbing allegations in the civil complaint, while they're not proven and they're not sworn to under oath, the league really has no choice but to investigate. But if the league escalates this to a paid leave or eventually discipline, I think this would be the first known instance in which a civil lawsuit has provided the sole basis for the NFL disciplinary apparatus being commenced. In every one of those other high-profile cases, when we're talking about Greg Hardy, Adrian Peterson, Ray Rice, Michael Vick, they all arose out of a criminal setting. This is the first civil lawsuit that has potentially, or will potentially, lead to this kind of outcome. So, and it does raise the issue of fairness. And it places the player in a very vulnerable position relative to people who threaten litigation. It places the plaintiff in a superior position of bargaining power, because you're really playing with the player's livelihood here once you make that threat in court.
So when it comes to the timeline of the investigation, and you look at the big picture of Antonio Brown and where he is, and most of us here in New England think this is a one-year length of stay for Antonio Brown in New England. We think he will be playing here for one season and one season only. We thought that prior to learning about these allegations. So if he's taken off the field during this season, you don't believe that will be because of an investigation that leads to a suspension. You think the only way that's going to happen in 2019 is due to the commissioner's exempt list, correct?
More likely than not. I mean, just think about the number of moving pieces here. 7 witnesses, 2 cities, 3 alleged incidents, bringing in experts, advisors, scheduling the meetings with whichever number, whoever of the witnesses is volunteering to testify. No NFL sexual assault or domestic violence investigation has ever been wrapped up in a matter of weeks. I think on the outer limit, Ezekiel Elliott took a fairly long time, almost a year, between the incident report and the rendering of discipline. I think this will move much more expeditiously, but I still think we're looking in the ballpark of at least 2 months, which you know is at least 8 weeks, cutting into the vast majority of the season. But if I had to predict, I think we're looking a little bit at towards the tail end of the regular season, maybe even the off season, just using past domestic violence cases as a benchmark.
Daniel Wallach, you can find him on Twitter at Wallach Legal, gaming law and sports betting attorney and founder of Wallach Legal, and also now writing on The Athletic. Quick one for you before we let you go. When is Massachusetts going to legalize sports gambling? I keep pounding the desk here every day saying we need to stop dragging our feet. When is that happening?
As soon as they realize that New Hampshire will be siphoning off all of the mobile betting activity based upon, you know, Massachusetts residents crossing the border. So once New Hampshire is up and running and they're taking all of the local money, I think lawmakers will wake up and make it more of a priority. So I would say 2019 is unlikely. I think 2020 is the year. You won't have it by the Super Bowl, but by the end of next calendar year, I would fully expect sports betting to be made legal and for mobile betting to be available statewide. There's just too much interest in it, and there are 9 bills that were introduced in Massachusetts this year alone. They'll get it done. It's just a question of timing.
All right, Daniel. Appreciate the time, as always. Thank you.
Thanks for having me on. Pleasure as always. Have a great day.
Daniel Wallach, legal expert, with us here on Zolak and Bertrand. Hardy has our headlines. Burt Breer will be with us at 11. And don't forget, your first chance to win Patriots tickets at 11:30.
Miss something?
You gotta wear your lucky jersey. Don't wash the lucky socks.
Rub your ball 16 times. Yep.
Listen to the podcast on the 98.5 The Sports Hub app. Now, back to Zolak and Bertrand on Boston's Home for Sports.
I think an even better precedent is Marcellus Darius of the Jacksonville Jaguars. Two women filed lawsuits against him last year, civil lawsuits in Florida State Court, both of which alleged sexual assault. And in one of the lawsuits, the victim or the plaintiff alleged that he gave her a sexually transmitted disease. So it lines up exactly, the same as the Brown lawsuit. That you have civil lawsuits, nothing other than a civil lawsuit. And in the Darius case, the NFL never investigated and didn't even consider. They never put Darius on the NFL commissioner's exempt list. So these two situations could end up being treated disparately. No action taken in the civil case against Darius. And if Brown is placed on the commissioner's exempt list, you're looking at disparate treatment of two similarly situated people.
Well, now you've got a name. Yeah, but what about Darius? What about Marcel Darius? The league didn't go after him. I'm going to tell you one key difference.
I think an even better precedent is Marcellus Darius.
Marcel Darius. Yeah, close enough.
Marcellus.
I knew what he meant. I knew what he meant. I knew who he was talking about. Marcel Darius faced two civil lawsuits, two sexual assault lawsuits from two different women. And this was reported in July of 2018. He was sued by two different women. And the difference between his two lawsuits and the lawsuit filed against Antonio Brown is a key difference. You know what the difference is?
No, what is it, Beetle?
Those were filed by Jane Doe's.
Nameless. The fact she attached her name.
They did not want to reveal their name.
Correct.
They wanted to remain anonymous. They did not want to put their name to the story. They wanted to remain unidentified, claiming that they were emotionally distraught and that they were embarrassed and felt self-guilt and did not want to put their name out there. That is very different from Antonio Brown's accuser, who is willing to put her name right on the line and then go meet with the NFL for 10 hours. So that is one key difference. How would the NFL have investigated a case where they don't even know who the accuser is? An accuser who has declined to identify themselves. I can't, if you're Roger Goodell and the investigators, I can't go ask the accuser what the deal is if I don't know who they are in a civil case. Have no way of doing it. Which is why Daniel Wallach's story today says the interview is very different than having just a civil case filed. That's what advanced it. Read it at The Athletic. The Athletic has his story posted, and it has an entire section on a cooperating witness versus unsworn civil allegations. How basically a civil lawsuit, just the lawsuit itself in the eyes of the league, would be pretty worthless. But once the accuser meets with the league, how it takes it to a different step legally in their mind and their eyes. So that's why. 617-779-0985. Andrew is in West Roxbury. Andrew.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Hey.
I'll be real quick. First, Beetle, I just want to say, I don't think, I mean, there are some crazy Patriots fans, but if AB got cut today, there wouldn't be any kind of outrage like with Brady and Deflategate. Like you mentioned the Barstool guys. I don't think any of that would happen I know there are some crazy Patriots fans that will stick up for him, but I don't like the guy, but I love the Patriots, and I'm going to continue to watch the Patriots. You know, I root for him.
I mean, we're talking about a equipment violation versus a sexual assault. That's a massive, massive difference. It's easier to get yourself arrested over that as opposed to defending this guy. I would have no expectations of anybody going out of the way to go nuts over this.
Right, you said exactly so. Like, I agree with you. And then, so, I just want to say you do a great job. And you're the color guy, or, you know, the play-by-play
guy
for Pats. And you're doing a talk show. So you got to kind of go in the middle, and you do a great job. It's a hard job. You guys do great. Love listening to you guys.
It is. You
man of the people. What's that? What was the term?
He's a stand-up guy. He's a stand-up guy. He's an advocate for calling the police if you get raped.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that we applaud him for. In fact, I give him some sort of medal of honor,
based on the caller yesterday, it wasn't across the board calling the police. It was what he instructs his own daughters to do.
Right. Well, yes.
And for that, he was a stand-up guy. And now, I believe the caller just said you're a true patriot and a hero. Because of the fine line you have to walk when discussing this, based on your relationship with
you're the color announcer,
but as a color analyst and a journalist, you know all these things. You wear a lot of hats, though,
really,
and for that, but don't sell yourself short. You're pretty much Edward R. Murrow. And for that, we salute.
The way you take on the team Monday through Friday and then have to go into the booth on Sunday. I don't know how you balance those two things.
I would like to take a moment to salute you personally and thank you for your service.
Yes, sir. Thank you. I feel like I'm doing it with Sarge. And a great movie guy.
Has everyone lost their mind?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
Watch Shawshank Redemption again, the entire movie again last night?
I need to have a laugh. I want to laugh at baseball. Can we laugh at baseball? And one specific thing that happened last night.
I found out this morning.
I want to laugh at so.
You found out this morning? You want to know what my day was yesterday?
Don't go anywhere. You're going to want to hear this. We're going to have a real good hearty laugh coming up next.
Goosebumps.
Zolak and Bertrand on 98.5 The Sports Hub. Follow these guys on Twitter at Zo and Bertrand.
A rival batter hits one off the wall, and there's Yastrzemski going for the ball. They try for two, the runner knows he's through. Ah, look at Yaz! Whoa, he threw him out again.
Mike Yastrzemski.
The man they call Yaz. The state of Maine is going quite insane. And in Vermont, it's only Yaz they want.
Oh my God, Zoe. Have you seen? How have you not seen the tweets? You didn't even know this was going on?
Okay.
Yaz's grandson was playing at Fenway last night.
So you get up yesterday, 6:30.
The man they call Mike.
You get up, you play 6:30.
The graphic on our broadcast.
Help pack the kids' lunches, drop Brody off at 8, hustle over to start our taping. Coach was a little late yesterday getting to it, so some stuff got backed up. We did our show. Thank you for you guys being down here so we can do these things. And immediately after that, you have to go over, and we didn't have some sound because they were still doing some locker room stuff. So we came back and taped some more stuff into the afternoon, get home, get Brody ready, get him out to practice. I'm assistant coach, so we're there for almost 3 hours last night. Get back, lay down. Shawshank comes on. I see that. Boom. Fall asleep watching that on a couch. Wake up today, 6:30, go to the bathroom, get on our Slack. I see all the Goosebump tweets. If you don't look at this one and have goosebumps, and you're not human. I'm like, well, what this is about? Oh, Yaz has a grandson.
Mike Yastrzemski.
A man they call Yaz.
Have you seen some of the tweets?
Well,
First of all,
I.
Do you know Steve D'Ossi has a kid that's in the league? It's been in the league for a long time.
Yeah. I would like to apologize to Billy Lanny for what he had to endure yesterday. Billy Lanny had a great tweet 18 hours ago where he said, "Wait, Yaz has a grandson that plays in the majors?" ? To which he got multiple responses. "Yeah, you should know that working in sports media, idiot. Yeah, it was a joke because he got shoved down our throats for quite a while yesterday. The grandson of Yaz playing at Fenway Park last night.
When did it get shoved down our throats? Oh, by the coverage.
By everybody.
Game time.
Yes.
By everybody. Now, okay, that's nice. That's pretty cool, yeah. Legendary Red Sox player.
That's cool.
And it's a local kid. Well, not a kid. He's 29.
How long has he been in the minors?
He was in the minors for a long time, and he finally broke through. That's a good story. It's great. Good for him. And always root for a guy like that.
Did they groove him? Works and works and works.
No, he's been on a tear. He's had a great season. No,
like, did they give him the wink and say, you want to groove one day?
No. No, it was just Evaldi throwing hard fastballs right over the plate.
Nice throw, meat.
Story of his year. And he jacks it to center. And so, like, there's this just the whole day.
Over the top.
Just the long list of people talking about the day and how amazing it was. And how,
like, they got nothing. They have nothing else to talk about.
Historic. And
the team's dead.
Guys, do you know how many father sons there have been in Major League Baseball, and how many families and like generations have played in?
Is Ken Griffey Jr. Ken Griffey's kid?
Yeah, he was. Like, yep, his dad played, and then he played.
My dad played with him in high school.
Yep. His dad played, then he played. Isn't that interesting how that happens?
Cool.
Yep. How many brothers have played? How many father sons have played? Like, what is this?
If you have somebody that is, that,
I mean, the Boone family. Jeez,
I mean, you do.
I mean, like, what
generations?
You have a profession that is sports related. Usually, your family is kind of around it. Maybe a kid or grandkid will pick up on that at some point. And maybe it's in their genes.
Like, what are we doing here? What is this?
That was a good point. Cal Ripken and Billy Ripken were coached by their father.
Yeah,
same team.
Did we shed tears over that? No, I don't know. It's nice. Nice story.
I played with Farrell Edmonds, a tight end at Maryland. He has two kids that were first rounders.
It's a nice story. It's cool.
Good story. That's good stories.
It's nice.
Yeah. But I mean, like,
it is a good story.
I think the guy's story,
the fact that he's had a good year and he's 29 and broke through from the minors, like, that's a good story on its own. And then he's, you know, local to here, and he comes back and plays at Fenway Park and hits a home run.
Like Tim Thomas.
Without being Yaz's grandson, that's a good story on its own.
Tim Thomas, like, you know, at the end of your career, you get really good. You know, you took forever to get to this point.
But the tweets. Hey. I just laughed.
What do we got? Do we have any, like, we have any old time?
Yeah, can I read, Jim, can I read some of the tweets?
Jim, can we have some music in the background?
Can I read some of the tweets?
Baseball, Ray.
Walking across the outfield to the wall yesterday with Carl and Mike Yastrzemski was a stroll through baseball history. 58 years after Carl made his debut.
Could someone get Carl new pants, by the way?
In that, and in his first game,
his pants don't fit.
Throughout A's outfielder Leo Posada, Jorge's uncle,
a Posada.
At the plate, Peter Gammons.
That's Gammons. That's like Reese and Brady, like when he walks in and getting the first video of the day. On game day.
Mike Yaz just homered to dead center at Fenway. Baseball is just the greatest.
Who wrote that one?
Peter Abraham. beautiful. Hashtag Yaz. John Heyman.
Is this the three?
Just beautiful. One word. Beautiful. That's all we got. Like, this is what we were getting. It was tweet after tweet, how historic it was. What was historic about it? I don't understand that. What was the history being made? Historic.
I don't know, hitting it in that park, maybe.
No,
the grandpa hit one there one day. Hey, Sonny. You're going to hit the ball. We remember we were playing a stick ball, and then we played some wiffle ball. Then you came up through the Cape Leagues, and then you're in the minors. He just popped one where Pappy put one in the seats. Did you see Carl's pants? Where do you think he gets pants like that?
I don't know.
I need those oversized pleated pants.
Ocean State job lot.
Someone just get him some new pants. Just call your Yastrzemski.
The home run call was special. Do we have it? Do you have it?
Oh, can we play it?
You can't reference it and then not have it, Hardy.
Yeah. I mean, can we play it?
Who? Can we play it?
Was it radio? Was it TV? Which one are you talking about? Was it there?
I heard it.
Was it San Francisco?
I know what you're talking about. Got it. Ready?
Ready.
Fly to center field deep. Going back, Jackie Bradley looking up, and it is gone. Yastrzemski takes it out of Fenway. His 20th home run of the season. Boy, did he put
put a swing on this ball or what?
What a magical moment that is.
Does he play for the Red Sox?
Nope.
Was that the Red Sox broadcast?
What do they got to look forward to?
He does not play for the Red Sox.
Oh, God.
He doesn't play.
I don't know.
Like Benjamin Brady coming back to throw a touchdown against the Patriots?
Yes.
That's exactly what it was.
Oh, yeah, no. Benjamin's
kid.
You
need another generation, right?
So still calling games?
Dan Roach.
No.
Shoot me in the back of the head. Couldn't write it any better. Mike Yaz goes deep for the Giants.
Actually,
first
I could.
Ever
no, I could.
MLB game.
How about this? Let me rewrite it.
Had been 36 years at Fenway since
Roach.
A Yaz played in a game. So cool.
Let me rewrite it better with one word.
Cool.
Mike Yastrzemski goes deep for the Red Sox. There you go. I just
That's
made
it
100% better.
Bingo.
That's how you write it better.
Hey, the loser in all of this, by the way. Last night's Giants DH, Chris Shaw. He's from Stoneham, Mass, Boston College, and no one's talking about it.
Great point.
Dan Roach, early in the day, when they were walking in from the monster. History! Exclamation point. Yaz and his grandson Mike out in left field with the wall behind them at Fenway Park. Pretty special. It's his grandson! Yeah, he's going to see his grandson!
It's a transcendent moment at Fenway Park.
History.
I felt as though I were levitating above the entire scene, watching it unfold.
All right. It's a nice moment. Let's recognize it. Can we move on, though?
Mike announced by PA voice Henry Mohegan at Fenway Park as he leads off for the Giants Tuesday night. First time a Yaz was introduced in an MLB game here since 1983 when his grandpa Carl played for Boston. Pretty cool.
Mike Yastrzemski.
You think Maz will have his pants off at the baseball reporters tonight?
No. Maz will not care about this.
Thank you.
And as cool as that moment was, it was nothing like the fourth inning, boy.
Fly to center field deep. Going back, Jackie Bradley looking up, and it is gone. Yastrzemski takes it out of Fenway. His 20th home run of the season.
Boy, did he put a swing on this ball or what?
What a magical moment.
Magical. Magical. It's magic. It's a magical moment. Magic.
You thought winning the World Series was great last year? Now you've seen magic, folks.
This guy who played here, his grandson plays for another team, and he played here too. Stop.
Popcorn and peanuts for everybody.
That's just calm down. It's a tiny bit.
Was everybody wearing suits and ties and top hats to the game yesterday? Hello there, Sonny. Come on to the game.
It is a season of absolute rat crap from